swinging a high fly.
Swung on high.
This is tagged right.
Hammered at the gap.
At the track. High and deep to right.
That ball just got out of here.
That was hit a ton.
This is going to go to the rock
pile. This ball's getting small.
This is charged. Right back at the track.
It seems like the ball's had a lot of life the last couple of nights.
We could go back to back. Here's Adam Engel swinging along with the left. We're going to have a tie ball game. He did go back to back. High and deep. This is crushed to left center field. This is going to go for a home run. Way out of here.
This is White Sox Weekly.
We're moving to that next pitch. It's time now to start having that progress towards a championship caliber team ultimately.
From our standpoint, there's a lot to be excited about.
Oh, this ball is absolutely blistered. High, far, I don't know if it's landed yet. Luis Robert, a two-run homer.
Barrel homer. Holy cow. You know, the ball jumped off. He's got leverage. He's got bat speed. He's got to put that all together, and he could be a monster.
I think we're ready to take that next step and head deeper down the path to ultimately winning championships.
The Chicago Baseball Conversation.
Deep in the right field.
On the flagship home of the Sox.
It is gone.
720 WGN.
Welcome in. It's White Sox Weekly on this day that does not feel like baseball weather at all here in the city of Chicago. I'm Andy Mazur alongside Kevin Powell. We'll take you through until 5 o'clock tonight. Then we'll do a little switcheroo. We'll do the beat for you and then get to some World Series baseball, game number 4 between the Astros and the Nationals. And that's been a pretty good series so far.
I hope it goes 7 games, Andy, because I'm not ready for baseball season to be completely over.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really is. Well, I mean, there's a lot of interest, though, in what the White Sox are going to do here in this offseason. So I think the sooner you get to the offseason, the more that some of these questions as to what Rick Hahn and company might do will get answered.
And I think it's going to be one of the most active off seasons in a long, long time that we've seen from the White Sox. This is the perfect moment in a rebuild to spend some money and bring in some free agents and start adding some pieces to the young core.
Curtis Koch is our producer here today. We're going to hear from Michael Huff, the director of youth baseball for the White Sox. He'll come up here in just a few moments. And later on, I had a chance to catch up with the player personnel director, Chris Getz. We had got some interesting conversations about some of the players that you might be wondering what his thoughts are about and what they may have a chance to do here in the 2020 baseball season. All that coming up in just a moment. Right now, though, as the White Sox fans kind of gather around their radio right now, they have to put back their way back hats on and go all the way back to the year 2005. And I know that young Kevin was right by the radio or right by the TV. I don't know which one you were right by, but it was today. In 2005, that the White Sox wrapped up the World Series against the Houston Astros.
Tying run at second, two out, Palmeiro over the head of Jenks. Uribe charges, throws, out! And the White Sox have won the World Series! Juan Uribe with a play, charging it, throwing it, and the White Sox celebrate their first title in 88 years.
Chills, goosebumps, Andy Mazur. I was posted up. I grew up in the Northwest suburbs, still live out there. So there wasn't a ton of Sox fans. I had a handful of friends here and there. But for the most part, I was surrounded by Cubs fans. So for that whole run, growing up a White Sox fan, it was a lot of just kind of family gatherings in the family room, surrounded the TV. But that ball was hit. And I remember I was in the family room with my dad, my younger brother, and my mom. I think my older brother was out with his friends. My sister was out with her friends. So it was just us four, and the ball was hit. We all popped up collectively from the couch, and we jumped up and down around the family room like a bunch of lunatics, hugging each other. And so happy for my dad, because that's the reason I was a Sox fan. He went to a bunch of Sox games as a kid. His dad was a Sox fan. So people always ask me, how were you a Sox fan growing up in the Northwest Burbs, like the heart of Cubs Nation? And so that's why. My dad took me to games, watched the games with him, so I fell in love with the White Sox as a kid growing up. That moment, just listening to that clip gives you goosebumps and chills. That was such a fun ride.
You ready for some more goosebumps?
I'm ready for some more goosebumps.
Because it was a crazy ride getting to that final game, of course. There were several key moments en route to the 2005 World Series.
Podsednik hits one to deep right center field. Back at the wall. This ball is gone! Podsednik goes deep. His second home run of the postseason. And the White Sox win it 7-6.
That was a nice moment.
Scott Podsednik hadn't hit a home run that entire season. He hit two in the postseason, one of them a walk-off.
Yeah.
It's just certain there are certain teams that you can just kind of feel this is their year, right? I mean, even
destiny moments,
even like the Nationals right now. With the, I know they lost yesterday, but they had went 18-2 over a 20-game stretch. They had some incredible moments in the postseason. It's easy to get sold on a certain team when certain things happen over a stretch, a period of time, and you just felt like it was trending in a 4-game sweep, or it was. It just felt right, everything, that 2005 season.
You want more goosebumps?
Yes.
I got more goosebumps for you.
Give me all the goosebumps.
Bases loaded, two out. With Canerco on. And he rips one in the left. Canerco, grand slam. Longest game in World Series history. Blum hits it into right, down the line. It is gone. Jeff Blum, the former Astro, goes deep. And here in the 14th inning, the White Sox take a 6-5 lead. Jeff Blum gets his first at-bat of this series and only his second of the postseason.
The funny thing about that is now that Jeff Blum is a TV analyst once again for the Astros, and I met Blummer the first time he was a Padre in 2007 when I was there and talked very glowingly about that moment. And, of course, Ed and DJ kind of give him a little grief every time they see him wearing the Astros stuff.
Well, as we continue to go down memory lane, I remember that game, how late it went.
Uh-huh.
And I remember showing up to, I think it was a sophomore, junior in high school. No, I think it was a senior in high school. But my first period was gym class.
Okay.
And our gym teacher, Coach Huber, was a diehard Sox fan. And I remember showing up, he goes, "I didn't think you were going to be here this morning, Paul." I said, "I'm here, Coach. I'm here. What a night." So it was just such a fun run.
You know, it's interesting when you go to different ballparks, and there's so much history in a lot of these ballparks, but you go to Guaranty Rate Field now, and you look out toward left center, and of course there's the catch, Dwayne Wise preserving the perfect game for Mark Burley. And then if you ever get the chance to go to Minute Maid Park, I know that a lot of White Sox fans will journey out into right field because that's exactly where that play happened.
Do they have any sort of commemorative plaque for that,
Andy? I think that Jeff Blum every once in a while sits out there.
That's about it.
Sits out there just in black, and he doesn't have to worry about his Astros microphone or anything like that. But it's one of those things that, you know, where you remember not only where you were, but you also remember exactly where the ball landed, what the circumstance was. You might even remember what you had for breakfast that day.
Yep. The weather of the day you were watching it, all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I do always think about the, it's not talked about enough. And I always say if like Derek Jeter made the catch, it would be in baseball lore forever. But the Juan Uribe catch in game
impressive.
Four with one out, the tying run was on. It's one of the most, as you said, impressive catches I've ever seen, and it's not talked about enough.
Yeah, you know, there's moments that overshadow it because of all the big home runs that we played, and you know, and just the fact that they actually ended up winning it in a sweep. It does get kind of brushed. He gets kind of brushed over a little bit.
Yeah.
And the impact that Uribe had on that team.
I mean, even the final out, that's not an easy play. That's a soft dribbler, and he had to charge it, and they barely beat the runner. So Juan Uribe was always one of my favorite players. He was such a character, even throughout his career, even after the White Sox. He's just such a funny guy to watch, and he was really good, too.
Yeah, there was a save by a guy in that World Series, too, that normally doesn't get saves. Mr. Burley?
That's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of things happen, as you point out. I mean, there's this kind
somebody,
of thing
so many
destiny.
Likable guys on the team, too.
Yeah, it was destiny. Burley, and Jermaine Dye.
Dye, Canerco, Joe Creedy, Aaron Rowan.
Yep.
Fun ride. And I think for Sox fans, hang in there. I know it's been a stretch, but good things are coming in 2020, I believe.
And good things are coming up straight ahead here on White Sox Weekly as we'll get you ready for Michael Huff, the director of youth baseball for the White Sox, and later on. The player director is Chris Getz. We'll get to talk to him a little bit later as well. Pick 10 plans are on sale right now. Get ready for the 2020 season with this flexible and affordable ticket plan. Pick your games, your opponents, your schedule with lower level plans starting at $205. Visit WhiteSox.com to pick your plan today.
And the White Sox pop-up shop is back at the Orland Square Mall. This offseason, visit the White Sox store at Orland Square Mall now through January 15th. Conveniently located across from the Apple Store, fans can shop stadium exclusives and special promotions throughout the holidays. For more information, follow at White Sox Store on Instagram.
He's Kevin Powell. I'm Andy Mazur. White Sox Weekly continues on 720 WGN in just a moment.
At the wall, the 380, gone! A three-run homer for Tim Anderson. 3-1 White Sox.
Back to White Sox Weekly on 720 WGN.
Back with the White Sox Weekly. Andy Mazur joined here by Kevin Powell as we take you through 5 o'clock. We'll hear from Chris Getz coming up here in just a few moments as well. I want to take some time right now to talk to the director of youth baseball for the White Sox and an all-around good guy, Michael Huff. Michael, how you doing, man?
I'm good, Andy. And yourself?
I'm doing all right. Kevin Powell is alongside here as well. And, you know, we were just listening back to some of the highlights from the 2005 World Series. The final game, the fourth game, was in 2005 on this date. Pretty fun to kind of reminisce and think about that moment.
Oh, my gosh. Incredibly much. It was, I think, for all of us former players, those people especially from Chicago, to think about how long this team had gotten close and how many times they were right on the cusp. I remember my team in 93 and then the great team in 94 before the strike hit, and to see it all come to fruition. And all of us still go back, even when we get the 93 guys together, we talk about that pitching staff in 05 and how that doesn't get brought up every year the playoffs come around, because what those four guys did was just incredible.
Any singular moments stick out? We were kind of reminiscing. I talked about Juan Uribe's catch in Game 4. That I don't think that gets talked about enough. Obviously, Canerco's Grand Slam. Podsenik, did you have a favorite moment from that incredible run?
Well, again, great question, Kevin. And being kind of that defensive kind of guy, you're right. I mean, the defensive plays really kind of jump out at me, but also being a leadoff hitter, kind of a light bat, you know, a good line drive guy. When Podsednik hit that home run, you know, as a little Punch and Judy type hitter, really good at going the other way, really good with hitting runs. Anytime a guy like that can hit a home run, that's kind of the thing that resonates and I'll always remember.
You know, it's interesting, too, that you point out that you guys still feel a connection to that team, even though you didn't play with a lot of those guys. And I think that kind of gets lost in the shuffle, too, because, you know, once you play for an organization and kind of dedicate yourself to it, I mean, you can't help but revel in good things, even if it's not with your team.
Well, and I'm going to have to amend that a little bit, in that there are not very many organizations, I think, in any sport that brings back or makes the former players still feel a part of the organizations. The White Sox, again, what they do for their fans, what they do for the kids out there in left field, but even more so for the players, they've always made us feel a part of the organization. And so we've been riding every wave up and every wave down, I think, as much as the fans. And I think that's what really bonds us to, you know, the 2000 team, then to the 2005 team. And I know next year and the year after, we're probably going to be talking about the same type of thing going forward.
Let's talk a little bit about what you do for the White Sox. And, of course, as the director of youth baseball, I know you were busy during the summer, because it seemed like every weekend I popped my head out of the dugout, I saw you and either Jason Benetti or someone else with a bunch of players on the dugout and a whole bunch of young kids in the crowd asking questions. That seemed like such a super thing, and I know you did that quite a few times during the summer.
Well, part of what the White Sox have done, and literally this is now going on 30 years, is try to take the knowledge of the White Sox coaches out to the community. So I oversee one portion of the White Sox sort of marketing department that goes out and runs camps, runs clinics for parents as well as the kids. But in the summer, that's where the White Sox really bend over backwards to make sure every kid that's in one of our summer camps from the Wisconsin border through Northwest Indiana has an opportunity to get to the ballpark, to get to talk to a current player and Jason and one of the coaches, but then to get to stay and actually watch batting practice and see how these guys go about their business. And like you said, Andy, when they start funneling in and filing into their seats, every time this year of the five times that we came, there were some of the players from the White Sox that were doing the early hitting, the extra work. And it wasn't, you know, just the 24th, 25th guys. It was Jose Abreu. It was Tim Anderson working on ground balls. It was Eloy Jimenez working on fly balls. And so everything that we get to teach the kids, whether it's in the summer camps or in the winter, and I know we'll talk a little bit about what we're going to be doing coming up, as much as you have former major leaguers like Mike Huff and Dan Passwood, Jim Medusi, talking to these kids and these parents about the dedication, the extra work that major leaguers put in, that these kids need to do whatever the sport is, whatever the academics is, it was so neat for those kids to be able to see those all-star caliber players that were out there working extra even before batting practice. So that's what, again, it's just so much fun being a part of this organization and overseeing sort of that component for them these days. days.
Do you see a direct correlation when there is White Sox success to youth participation? I mean, obviously, there's always going to be kids that want to play, but when you do have players like Tim Anderson or Yoan Moncada that I think younger kids can relate to a little bit, at least, or be attracted to that player, do you see a correlation with an uptick in participation when you have marketable players or the team is having success?
Yes, and I think in the Chicagoland area, that actually started 3 or 4 years ago, and we don't want to talk too much about that other team in town. But when you can see some young, exciting players, when you can have, you know, a Kyle Schwarber who's just a good doggone egg, you know, a Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo who's at the Children's Hospitals, kids will start to kind of perk up a little bit. And with the White Sox success coming up, what I see is this wave that's going to continue in Chicago. And the leagues that we work with and bring to the ballpark and do these clinics, the numbers are growing in those leagues. And I think in general, when there's winning baseball in Chicago, kids start to get a little bit more perked up. And we know it's going to get exciting on the south side because my north side friends or Cub friends are all saying they wish they were in our position going into 2020, not necessarily their position, which is a little bit scary for them, but very exciting for us because I think, as you guys talk about, Kevin and Andy, 2020 is going to be fun, but it's really going to be a building block to some very special things in 2021 and 2022.
Michael, in about 90 seconds we have left with you here, just tell us some of the things that are going on here in the winter, because you look outside right now and it doesn't seem like baseball weather, but baseball is always going on.
Yes, and we have facilities in LaGrange and Lyle where we are running basic camps for hitting, pitching, fielding for kids 5 through 12. But we're also talking to a number of travel teams, travel organizations, as well as just entire little leagues about doing coaches' clinics or preseason training for the little leagues, about talking to those travel programs to say, let's go down a layer or two and really get after these kids and give them some really good instruction for a 4, 8, 12-week period before they get back outside in the spring. But starting sort of right now, we're going to get busy through March, April, and even May. So unfortunately, or fortunately, baseball, you know, is pretty much a 12-month of a year sport these days.
10 seconds. Who's winning the World Series this year?
I still got to go with Houston. I think that the pitching that they're going to have lined up, if they can get one more of these two, they're going to go back home, and I kind of think they're going to be able to pull it off.
Michael, great insight, and again, we'll have folks head to the website, whitesox.com, to find out more information about what you do and about those camps, and as always, we appreciate you taking some time.
Thank you so much, Andy. You too, Kevin. Have a great rest of the weekend.
Thank you.
All right. Michael Huff, the director of youth baseball for the White Sox, joining us here. 2020 ticket packages are on sale right now. Secure your seat with a 20-game plan. Find the plan that meets your schedule and budget with lower-level plans starting as low as $403. For more information, visit whitesox.com or 312-674-1000.
And Sox Fest right around the corner returns January 24th to the 25th in a new location. Excuse me, McCormick Place. The two-day fan fest will span more than 100,000 square feet, offering more ways to connect with your favorite Sox stars. Sox Fest 2020, presented by Beggar's Pizza, Guaranteed Rate, Old Dominion Freight Line, Securian Financial, and Wintrust. Single and two-day passes are on sale now. Get yours at whitesox.com/SoxFest.
We'll get a check of news and then more White Sox Weekly on WGN.
Wow, what a play!
720 WGN, the team's flagship radio station.
You're listening to White Sox Weekly on the home of the Sox, 720 WGN.
As we continue here on White Sox Weekly, Andy Mazur joined by the Director of Player Development for the White Sox, Chris Getz. And I know the offseason is upon us, but do you really have an offseason in your business?
You know what? There's not too much downtime. I'd say as you go through the calendar year, I would say that certainly the responsibilities may change. The pace of things, during the year, you've got the games that are going till, 10:30, 11 at night. So maybe you're on call a little bit later than you are in the off season, but there's a lot of work to be done.
So what are you guys concentrating on these days and at this point of the year?
On the player development front, we just wrapped up both Instructional League and Arizona Fall League. We're about to start up our Dominican Instructional League shortly on November 1st. We'll be heading down to the DR, but planning some off-season mini camps, and before you know it, spring training will be here. But free agency, we're in a period right now where we can re-sign some of our minor league free agents that we already have control over. And then once 5 days after the World Series, floodgates open and free agency officially begins. So we'll start diving into that soon.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the Arizona Fall League because I know there's a couple of guys that you guys had on that roster, namely in Blake Rutherford and Gavin Sheets, a couple of guys that really started off slowly in their minor league seasons. How did you see them develop through the year? Because I know both of those guys finished pretty strongly.
They did. Blake's first 2 months were not pretty, and he would certainly openly share that with anyone. But the most impressive thing was that he bounced back and finished strong, where a lot of the guys, perhaps just never really get it together and then more or less quit on the year. He didn't do that. So there were still plenty of positives to take away. And then down the Arizona Fall League, and I've been out there a little bit and checking in with people that have been watching him play, and he's done pretty well. So there's been, his numbers aren't necessarily jumping out at you, but his at bats have been really solid, and the feedback's been strong. Gavin Sheets, a guy, he was fairly consistent throughout the year. I think the brightest spot of his game and his year was the power production, something that we knew he had. He just hadn't really been able to go out there and put up the numbers. And Birmingham is not an easy place to hit. Southern League is not. And he went out there and he led the Southern League in RBIs, and he had he was close to 20 homers. So that was good to see. Just a solid all around player, his solid defense, and now we're getting some offensive production to match that. So that was nice to see. And then some of the other arms that we have out in the Fall League, two that kind of stand out, Tyler Johnson and Bernardo Flores, both ran into some injuries this year, so these guys had some innings left, and they're out there, and they're performing well, and Tyler's going to continue, actually, for Team USA as they attempt to qualify for the 2020 Olympics. So I'm excited to watch him perform even more.
Now, I want to talk about him and that qualifying in just a second, but there's another guy that I think a lot of people had an eye on as far as your Arizona Fall League roster was concerned, and that's Mike Rodolfo. I mean, we've heard a lot about him. Obviously, the injury bug has not been very kind to him. When you saw what he did in the Arizona Fall League, I know it's kind of hard for fans to look past numbers, but were you, A, just happy that he was out there, and B, happy that he was being able to face the competition that he did while in Arizona?
Yeah, I mean, with the uniqueness of his year and missing that time, the real focus and purpose for the Fall League was just to get more at-bats, see competitive pitching, but also play in the outfield. He hadn't played in the outfield in a while, so to get his reps out there, his arm is back, it's strong. That was very encouraging. And then, there was going to be some bumps along the way in the Fall League. He hadn't faced live pitching for some time, let alone Fall League type pitching, which is generally, I'd say better pitchers in the Fall League than perhaps we even faced down in the Southern League. So, but he was inconsistent in the beginning, but he put together some good games and good at-bats, and we're in discussion to maybe even continue for him to play some winter ball to also get some at bats. But he's back to being a baseball player. He was one dimensional as a DH because of his arm injury, and now to get him out there and get him back to being the player that we think he can be. But it's a matter of him maturing really as a hitter overall, because we've seen plenty of hitters, within the minor league system or across the game that flash power here and there, but the name of the game is consistency. So, and we believe he's going to be able to be a consistent power producer for us.
All right. So you mentioned Tyler Johnson and his trying to qualify for USA Baseball and with the Olympics coming up. But Andrew Vaughn also on that roster of guys that are trying to make the final squad and represent the United States in the 2020 Olympics. And I wanted to ask you about Vaughn in particular because, first round draft choice, played a lot of games with Cal, and a lot of games now in the minor leagues, too. What did you see from him, first of all, and did you notice a little bit of a tail off just because the kid's human? He was probably exhausted from the whole season.
It was a long year. But Andrew Vaughn is, this guy, I know the term gets thrown around fairly easily. He's a baseball player, but man, he loves to play, and he loves to compete, and he's got such a positive vibe about him. That's the first thing that stood out, but the first interaction I had with him. But he kind of lights up the room. Teammates love him. He's one of the boys. So that always bodes well for guys and teams to have players like that. And then you break him down as a hitter. I mean, he's what he does mechanically, what he does as an approach, it's very advanced. It's like talking to a veteran major league hitter. His approach through the middle of the field, he's got good control with his body, his lower half, good sense of timing. He hits to all fields. I would say that he's not going to tell you he's a power hitter. He'd probably tell you that he's a hitter first, which is a good sign. So we're really excited to have him. When you kind of break down there, he had an excellent college season. Working him into professional baseball, had some quick stops along the way, was able to finish in Winston-Salem. Was he gassed? Probably. Did he admit it? No. But he was still fairly productive, even though you look at kind of the traditional stat line, maybe doesn't jump out at you, but in terms of the expected numbers, the hard hit, it was in there. So, with the Olympic qualifier, this Team USA, the board members typically reach out to the organization, myself, and, they were interested in a couple of our guys, and I leave it up to the player. I really do. And with Andrew, and you look at his first taste of professional baseball, is he going to be gassed and want to do this? And he, without hesitation, he said, I want to do this. And which just shows kind of the kid that he is and what he's going to bring to the table. So, it's not a demanding, time that goes into your off season too much. He's still able to certainly get his workouts in preparation. They only play 8 games total, if they end up winning. So, in terms of workload and the taxing of the body, that's not really a concern, but excited for him to be a part of it and experience that. I hope that they go out there and win the thing and qualify for the Olympics. I think it's just good for baseball, good for our country. Tyler Johnson, once again, he had some innings to make up because of the lat injury he had, at the first portion of the year. He finished strong in the fall league, and I would imagine that he's going to really be a helpful arm for that team.
Yeah, Director of Player Development Chris Getz joining us here on White Sox Weekly. We'll have more coming up with Chris Getz in just a moment. Remind you that Sox games are better with a group. It's never too early to lock in your 2020 group package, from a diamond suite to a pregame patio party. We've got the perfect space for your occasion. For more information, visit whitesox.com or call 312-674-1000.
And stay up to date on all things White Sox this offseason by signing up for the free White Sox Blacklist. Get breaking news, prospect updates, special ticket offers, and more delivered right to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/blacklist to sign up today.
And our conversation with Chris Getz, sponsored by Mazda of Orland Park and ZoomZoomNation.com, where they're always trying to make your car shopping fun. More with Chris Getz and more at White Sox Weekly coming up on 720 WGN.
It's great to be back with WGN.
It's White Sox Weekly on the official radio station of the Chicago White Sox, 720 WGN.
Welcome back. White Sox Weekly continuing here on 720 WGN. Andy Mazur and Kevin Powell are continuing our conversation here with Chris Getz, the Director of Player Development. And it's possible to think that we spent about 10 minutes talking to Chris and have not mentioned Luis Robert coming back from his kind of a lost season a year ago. And I wanted to find out what he saw from him, because Robert really flew through the system.
Yeah, I mean, when we acquired him, obviously there was a large profile attached, a financial commitment. You saw the potential. Gosh, the first spring training and he shows up, I would say that he may have been the most impressive player out there. Your eyes just kind of jump out there. And that's just the athlete that he is. When you look at him, he could be, in the NBA, in the NFL, you name it. He looks like an Olympic athlete. So that certainly stands out. He hurt the thumb. He hurt the thumb. Then there was a re-aggravation of it. So he just never really was able to get that full strength in that full season last year. And it affected him. Clearly, because when he came back this year, he was the best player in the minor leagues. I know he's, and I say that because he's won that award, but he can impact the game in so many different ways. He's fun to watch run. The defense stands out. He's got power. He mishits balls, and they're just missiles. He's learning how to put professional at-bats together. He can square up a lot of pitches. He's aggressive. Certainly don't want to take that away too much, but as he kind of moves up and, you know, when the time comes and he graduates to the major leagues, certainly scouting reports are going to say certain things about him, the potential to take advantage of the aggressiveness. And that's what we're really going to hone in on. That's what we've talked about for him to focus on this offseason and hopefully take it into spring training the next year, because he's a special player.
You know, 30-30 season at any level is not something that is accomplished all the time, and that's pretty impressive. But, you know, aside from those numbers, and what stood out most to you? What was most impressive to you in your role as a player development and knowing that this kid's on the right track?
Well, it starts from a character standpoint, just professionalism. You know, he the way he prepares for games stands out. He takes care of himself. So a lot of, you know, good foundational things are in place for sustainable success. And then you break down the tools and it's plus across. It's plus plus in some areas. So, he's one of those guys when you're at the game and perhaps as a fan, you're not going to take your bathroom break when he's coming to the plate. You look where he is in the lineup and you're like, I'm going to wait for that guy to hit before I leave these seats.
How difficult in general is it for a guy to come into your minor league system and force his way to not just one, not two, but all three of the levels? Because promotions aren't just handed out. I mean, they're obviously earned, but this guy, and there's another guy that did that in your system as well, Nick Madrigal.
There's some guys that it starts clicking and it moves quickly. And the more you kind of challenge them, the better they become. And both Louie and Nick did that. And, you know, there's sometimes reservations. Is this the right time to go up? There's plenty of indication that that he is ready to move. You know, you talk to the coaches, you break down statistically what's going on, the analytics, all those types of things, and you gather all the feedback and you try to make a sound decision. And but sometimes you worry, okay, is this a little too quick? But gosh, with those guys, that was a non-issue. They just continue to go.
And let's talk about Madrigal real quick, too, because obviously he doesn't have the same fanfare, I think, that Robert has, especially among the fan base. He's a solid player with a great approach. He scuffled just a little bit at the very beginning of his AAA season, but with his style and with the fact that he's a contact kind of guy, is that going to keep him out of prolonged slumps, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it does. You know, anyone that's been following the game, strikeouts are up, and a lot of that has to do with certainly the approach at the plate for these hitters, but the pitching is really good. I mean, you've got the average major league fastball has jumped. The starters are throwing harder, but they're also the way that they're attacking hitters with, you've got, you know, a Garrett Cole who's, you know, in upper 90s. He's got that as a weapon, and he's throwing his fastball below 50% of the time. They're coming at you, and they're coming at you quickly with their best stuff. So when you have that contact ability, and his is elite, it's gonna serve him well. It's gonna serve a team very well.
Yeah, and you know the fact is that we throw that thing around the ball player, the baseball player, and he kind of fits that profile as well. And the thing that intrigued me, he said something between even single A and double A about how the strike zone got smaller. And then he said when he got to triple A, it got even smaller than that. And it's one of those kind of things that as you progress, that's the kind of thing you have to learn, right?
Yes, I mean, some of that is probably the experience of the umpiring. As you go up, it certainly does improve, and him, you know, first full season as well, and you're looking at a guy that's still, you know, figuring out what type of professional hitter he's going to be and figuring out which pitches to go at, because, once again, he can square up, he can pretty much cover the whole plate. Now, within that plate, he's going to do a little bit more damage with certain pitches. So it's a matter of focusing on those areas throughout the at-bat. And those are the conversations we're having with him. But his aptitude is so high. Before you even have the conversation with him, before you sit down, he already knows. He can pretty much run the meeting. Let's put it that way.
It's good to have that kind of a coach-type player, right?
Yes, yes. No, he not only is he demanding excellence in himself, but others as well. And, you know, his focus. I mean, you watch him in the dugout, and certainly on the field defensively, on the base path, you know, on deck, he's just locked in. And, you know, the key to this whole thing is being able to remain focused for at least nine innings, you know, and some guys have trouble doing that. You get the highly skilled, tooled player that you want them to have them be an impactful player for you. But sometimes these guys kind of lose focus, and all of a sudden it turns into an error, a big play, and you're down three runs. And you just don't see that with Nick. And he, you know, it's almost like an osmosis effect. He does demand that excellence with others, and not care to. He doesn't mind calling other people out as well.
Chris Kratz, Director of Player Development for the White Sox. One more for you here, and it kind of regards this year's ball club as far as the White Sox were concerned, with Eloy Jimenez coming up, getting off to a slow start, but then really finishing strongly. Dylan Cease making his big league debut this year. Do you kind of watch those as, I guess the term would be, a proud papa, because you've watched these guys. I mean, maybe not as long as some of the other guys, but you've watched them come along, and now they're realizing their dream, and they're realizing that they're going to be able to help the White Sox be competitive over the next few years.
Sure. No, it's. I don't know if it's the most rewarding, but it is extremely rewarding to see players find their way to the big leagues, which for most of these guys, it's their childhood dream to make to the major leagues, and to be able to, you know, relay down to our manager, whether it be, you know, typically a AAA, sometimes a AA, that, you know, so-and-so is getting called up to the big leagues. It's kind of a chilling moment. It is. And then when they make the debut and experiencing that and talking to them about that, that's very cool. And you know, not always do guys roll in there and have success out of the gate. You know, that it rarely happens. But some of these guys, the experience that they got up there and then started to show the signs of what they're capable of doing, which is going to bode well for the White Sox, you know, moving forward.
Well, Chris, we certainly appreciate taking the time, and don't work too hard in the offseason, but work hard enough to make things right for 2020, of course.
Well, we're committed. I'm committed, and along with others, and yeah, we're always looking for ways to get better. But I appreciate you having me on, and have a great weekend.
All right. Chris Getz, the Director of Player Development for the White Sox. Always good to catch up with him. He's got some great insight, and is very candid about things.
Andy Mazur, you spent a lot of time around the White Sox organization,
yes,
over the past couple of years. Call games, pregame, postgame. Do you think Luis Robert is the opening day center fielder for your Chicago White Sox?
If you had to put me to it right now, I'd say yes. That's just me. I have no inside information.
That should get Sox fans excited.
Yeah, I have no inside information about that. But anyway, we're going to wrap up White Sox Weekly right here. We'll thank Michael Huff for his appearance on our show as well, the Director of Youth Baseball, and of course to Chris Getz. We'll continue with White Sox Weekly next week. Coming up after a check of news, it'll be The Beat. Kevin and I will join you until 6 o'clock, when we'll cover World Series game number 4 here on WGN Radio.